You are now listening to Computers Bite Back, brought to you by Grebog and Malcor.
This is Grebog.
And this is Malcor.
Okay, this time we're going to be talking about printers. Most people have them. I know they aren't essential to having a computer, but they can come in very handy if you want an offline copy of something or just want to have a backup of, well, if you're doing your taxes on your computer, it's best to probably have an offline copy of that in case something were to happen.
Now, printers come in all types of varieties and styles, and there's everything from dirt cheap little home printers to $1,000 professional grade poster size printers and all that sort of thing. But there's a couple things that they all have in common. The primary factor you need to take into consideration is the DPI. It stands for dots per inch. And what that's talking about is how fine a resolution the printer can get for anything it prints. Now, the higher this number is, means it has more dots per inch, so there's a larger number of finer dots that it uses to create the image, so it can make higher resolution images and wind up with sharper pictures and that sort of thing.
And this is kind of common, where the larger the number, the better it is. But also, normally, you're going to find the larger the DPI number is, and the better resolution you're going to get, the higher the price tag is going to get on the printer. And most printers, they use ink. If you're using a like inkjet, they'll typically call it ink. And this is just a colored fluid that is used to draw the images on the page. If you have a colored printer, you obviously will have it. Typically, you'll have at least two cartridges. You'll have your black, and then you'll have at least one with all the different colors in it. Or you may have a separate cartridge for each of the different colors. And then you have, well, other printers don't always use the fluids for putting images on the page. They use what they call toner. And this is basically just a powder and is typically referred to as what the laser printers use for drawing the images on the page.
And we'll get into the differences between the types of printers, such as laser printers and inkjet printers, in a minute.
There used to be actually a lot more options for types of ink or toner type, well, however you got the image transferred to the paper, because some of them actually used to use a cartridge, a ribbon cartridge, similar to what an old typewriter used. Some even used a wax crayon type item, where it would actually heat up and melt it to do the, yeah. Very complex, very high. Actually, it was one of the high-end quality printers that used the wax-type sticks.
Now, tonight, we're just going to talk about a couple of the main types of printers available today, and then we're also going to cover, you know, one of the ones that's a little outdated, but it's still around in some places. Now, when you're thinking about buying a printer, probably the first thing you need to consider is what you're actually going to use it for. Printers are pretty application specific, and there are a couple different things to keep in mind, but the first thing you need to do is make sure that you're buying what you actually need. And you know, now that I said that, I don't really know where I was going with that, because the next thing on our list is, you know, the types of printers.
Well, you're talking about the inkjets and how you can buy different inkjets that will be able to do different things, and also depend upon what you want your printer to do will vary on how much it's going to cost. If you want a very good printer to do images, photographs, then, you know, there are printers out there that are really high quality photograph creation printers.
Yeah. Now, in inkjets, the first type of... I'll see if I can get us back on track here. So the first type of printers we're going to talk about are inkjets. Inkjets are fairly common. For the most part, they're relatively inexpensive. although they tend to be more expensive to replace the ink. You can find these priced anywhere from $30 to like $17,000. Now, the way an inkjet printer works, they have the ink cartridges in the printer, which feeds into a print head that moves back and forth over the page. And the printer head will spray the ink, and it can control the size of the droplets it sprays, and it'll spray these variable size droplets onto the paper. And that's what it uses to form the image. For color applications, it'll adjust the size of each different color of ink to get a wide variety of colors. The amount of control it has over the size of the droplets affects the variety of colors and the sharpness of the colors it can produce. So that's another factor of the DPI. If it has a higher DPI, it's more likely to have a broader color scale available. And as Grebog said earlier, typically the ink comes in four colors. It'll be black, yellow, magenta, and cyan, although sometimes some of them will combine the three colored into one larger cartridge.
Now, there are some printers, when you go into the photo quality, they might actually have a lot more than just the basic four. A lot of the, even still the photo quality ones, you can still get good quality photos with just the four colors that were mentioned. But some of them actually kind of break out the shades a little more of the, you know, this rainbow, a little more finite, I guess, or a little more detailed in between, so there's not so many steps, so it can get you a even larger range of colors. I know there's one printer I saw that had, I think it was 7 colors on top of black.
Nice. So some of the main features that you get when you're using an inkjet printer. For starters, there's a wide variety of inkjet printers out there, from the tiny little portable photo printers you can carry around with a laptop to commercial-grade poster printers that can print full movie poster size, sharp photo quality images. Depending on the quality of the printer you pay for, inkjets can provide a very high DPI, which can get you very sharp photo quality images. And they generally have a pretty good blend of color. The color mixing technologies they use allow them to give you some pretty accurate color representation. So pretty much across the board, if you're looking for something to print photos with, inkjet's the way to go.
Now, some of the drawbacks for inkjets is, well, it's ink. You kind of go through it pretty quickly because those cartridges aren't that big. And if you're doing a decent amount of printing, you'll actually run through the ink cartridges quickly. And that will mean you're spending a lot of money. And some of those ink cartridges are not cheap at all. I'm pretty sure I've seen prices of $40 for a cartridge. And that might be a cheap one. Actually, I know my printer, I just bought a new black. It actually was only $25 for that one, but it's not that big of a black ink cartridge, so. And there's been also some companies that used to have issues with reading a complete full or how full their ink cartridges were. Now, this should have been fixed because there was a huge lawsuit over it, but one company, which I'm hesitant to buy their products now because they actually were telling you needed new ink when it still had about a fourth of a tank in the ink of left in there. So, and an additional drawback to inkjets is that the cheaper inks on the market tend to fade a lot more rapidly. So, and especially when exposed to sunlight, and can have issues adhering to print media without a special coating or lamination of after printing. So, some things to think about as I'm watching you edit while I'm talking.
Sorry, I misspelled coating.
Also, when you if you've used an inkjet printer, you probably have noticed the paper is, if you've done a large image, some paper will tend to wrinkle while it's after it's been printed, just because you just sprayed a ton of liquid onto it, which is common for paper to wrinkle when it gets wet. And if you were to touch that while it's still wet, you could smudge your image. And it's actually even possible after it's done drying, you could get your hand wet or drop of water onto the paper and you will see the ink smudge. And that's another one of the drawbacks to using a liquid-based ink system.
Now, something else to keep in mind, and this is as a result of the ink prices that Grebog was talking about earlier, a lot of times when you buy an inkjet printer, it'll come with print cartridges in it that are only have a little bit of ink in them. This kind of was fallout because when the ink prices first went up, you would have to pay, you know, $30, $40 for an ink cartridge, yet you could go buy a printer for $20. So a lot of people would just go buy a new printer instead of buying a new ink cartridge, which meant the printer companies were losing money. Some of the even less scrupulous people would buy a printer and then they'd buy a new printer and return the old printer in the original packaging. So to get around people doing that, they started selling them with partial cartridges in them.
And it's pretty common that almost, I can't think of, there might be one company left. I'm not sure if they still do it, but Epson at one time, to try to redeem their name for one of their issues they've had, was still putting in full cartridges, but everyone else went to the partial cartridge, and you're getting maybe half the ink that a full cartridge would have. And some of it, they're only made to print 25 pages out of their initial print cartridge, so that way you know it works, and that's all they care.
So that being said, you know, if you buy an inkjet printer and it runs out of ink right away, don't automatically assume that that's how it's going to be with every ink cartridge. It's not a bad idea to go ahead and buy ink cartridge refills whenever you buy an inkjet printer, so that way you have them on hand, since the original ones probably won't last very long.
Also, when you're looking to buy an inkjet printer, I typically like to price my refills for that printer before I walk out of the store and have purchased the printer, so that way I know what I'm going to get myself into with how much I'm going to have to pay every so often to keep my printer running. So it probably should be thought of. It's a good idea, I think, to kind of compare that at first. It doesn't mean you should base your decision 100% off of the price of the ink, but it is probably going to be the highest cost that you're going to put into your printer, so it's worth evaluating.
So, bottom line, when it comes to inkjet printers, they've got a much cheaper upfront cost, but if you're doing a lot of printing, large quantities, they tend to be more expensive in cost per sheet printed, or per page printed. So, with that being said, their best use is for home applications, including photo printing, but not really for the high quantity type stuff like you'd see a typical business printer.
Now the next big printer, they're not that big, but the next type of printer we're going to cover is the laser printer, and this typically means a higher cost up front, but the cost per page for high quantity printing is a much lower than inkjets. Basically how this works, the printer directs a laser beam onto the surface of a rotating drum, which is coated with a photoconductive material. When exposed to the light of the beam, these materials lose their static charge. The dry toner particles are then exposed to the drum, where they'll stick only to those areas that still have a charge. And as the drum continues to rotate, these toner particles are applied to the surface of the print media, which is then transferred through a fuser, which heats up the paper and basically fuses the toner directly to the paper. And that's pretty much the simplest way to describe how the process works.
Now, the laser printers are normally something you're going to see in a business environment. There are some cheaper models available. Their price tends to range from about $75 to somewhere around $5,000. But the primary advantages you get from a laser printer are they tend to print a lot faster, and they tend to be cheaper in the long run if you're doing a lot of printing all at once.
Give you an idea. A standard toner cartridge for... I just picked a random toner cartridge for one of the HP black and white printers. It cost $165, which that's pretty big upfront cost all in one shot, but it will print 7,000 standard pages before it's done. You're not going to get that out of an ink cartridge.
How much did you say it cost?
$165 for this toner cartridge for 7,000 pages.
So that comes out to just over 2 cents a page.
Like I said, it's a huge, you know, $165 is not pocket change, at least not for me. So that's kind of another big upfront cost for the toner. But yet, you get 7,000 pages, and that's, like Malcor said, 2 cents a page. So you do get your money out of it.
Hold on, I'm going to see if I can find an inkjet cartridge that tells how many pages it lasts for comparison. Which brand was that one you were looking at?
HP.
So apples to apples, I'll look at inkjet HP. No, I don't want the remanufactured.
Well, this is a pretty big print cartridge. I found a 400 milliliter black.
Well, here's just a typical HP inkjet ink cartridge. Costs $30, and it's estimated to last 800 pages, which comes out to about to almost 4 cents a page.
So the toner cartridge comes out to a cheaper price in the long run per page.
Yeah, it's half the cost per page as the inkjet. So, like we were saying, if you're doing high quantity printing, the ink or the laser printer winds up being cheaper long term. Now, the drawbacks to using a laser printer. For one thing, the cheaper models available are black and white only. If you want a color laser printer, that tends to be quite a bit more expensive. Secondly, some of the toners contain hazardous chemicals, so that means you gotta treat any toner spills very carefully. Not only do you run the risk of the hazardous chemicals, but you can also, if you're not careful, you can damage the fuser, which can be a pretty costly repair. Speaking of repairs, since they tend to be complex and the machines themselves can be more expensive, repair work, if the machine isn't under warranty, the repairs can cost quite a bit. Now, a lot of places, like businesses that have several printers, what they'll do is they'll get a support contract from a contractor, and those people will have trained technicians who come in and take care of it under what basically amounts to an extended warranty. And finally, a laser printer tends to not be quite as sharp as a inkjet printer, especially when it comes to color images like photos. Inkjets are primarily designed to churn out a whole bunch of printed text quickly, and they're not as good with sharp graphics.
Now, because they do cost a lot and you can get them fixed, that is actually one sort of, yes, it's a drawback that it would cost money to get them fixed, but most of your inkjets, and comparing it to that, you once the thing starts acting up and it doesn't work anymore, it's done. Now, laser printer, it starts acting up. You could probably get someone to fix it for you, and then you can still keep using it. Which means you don't have to continue. Like, you would have to go buy yourself a new printer just because it acted up. And some of the... If you know a little bit on how the printer works, you can actually fix it yourself. But that's not for everyone. Some people you will need to take it someplace. And there are, I think, some companies that will take your printers in and service them for you. I can't remember for sure what companies they were. I knew there were some places. I wanted to say Staples, but I'm not 100% on that. I'm not even close to 25% on that one.
So, the summary on laser printers, they're a very good choice if you have a business application, especially one that you're going to be doing a lot of printing. They aren't as capable as printing sharp, colorful photos as inkjet printers, and they have a higher upfront cost, but the cost per page tends to be lower, and they tend to be cheaper in the long run. And I have to say, when I saw this next one on the list for stuff we were going to talk about, at first I thought you might have been joking.
Well, when I started looking up printers, I saw them listed. I thought that, well, maybe there were a few antiques left, I guess is a good way to put it. Because, wow, I saw that. I'm like, really? They're still selling these?
If you look on Newegg, they are still selling these.
And what we're talking about is dot matrix printers. Very dated technology in printing. I can remember we had one for our Commodore 64, I believe it was. It was, well, maybe not for the 64, it might have been for the 286. Either way, we had it when I was fairly young, learning computers, and yeah, this was an old printer, but it was a good printer. It didn't break on us, it just printed.
But yeah, a dot matrix printer is old. You're probably only going to find one in old systems, and typical users aren't ever going to see one in this day and age. On this part here where it says pins, is that talking about the number of pins in the printhead?
Yes, that's the number of pins in the printhead.
Well, the way it works, the old dot matrix printers actually have a lot in common with old school typewriters. The way the ink is applied to the media, it has a cloth ribbon that is struck by the printhead, which has a whole bunch of little pins on it. Now, unlike a typewriter, a typewriter has a single pad for each letter, and it actually stamps that letter through the ink ribbon onto the page. The dot matrix printhead used its pins to shape each letter it was printing. You can find them with different number of pins per character on the printhead. So the number of the higher the more pins you had meant basically a higher DPI, which, as we said before, is a higher resolution, and you wind up with sharper printing. Some of the models fed the paper through the printer using a toothed wheel, looks kind of like a gear on each side of the page, and it was able to grab onto the paper because the paper would have a perforated edge on each side, which had holes that would match up to the teeth on this wheel. Basically, what this meant was you could take an entire case of this paper, feed the first page in, and it would sit there and print for hours and hours on end before it would run out of paper. Now, these printers are often found in places such as large-scale accounting practices or older laboratories where they print out huge quantities of data, just ream after ream of paper.
A lot of the newer dot matrix printers don't actually have the holes on the side to do the feeding through. They actually can use a standard sheet of paper and you just stack it in the top or the back, wherever the holds it holds the paper, and it will feed the paper through. So that's a legacy thing, but that some of them still do use that type of paper. Of course, we're talking about legacy things anyway, so.
Now, back in the day, this kind of printer was the only way to fill out a pre-printed form electronically. You'd have to set up a special program, and you'd fill out the blanks, and it would print it onto the form for you, which meant they were really popular in places like government offices. For older institutions that may still have dot matrix printers kicking around, the resistance to change and the cost of changing over their computer systems are what made sticking with the dot matrix more attractive. Now, this attitude's fading pretty quickly as the print technologies are becoming more advanced and user-friendly, and as the dot matrix printers are starting to break down to the point where they can't be repaired anymore. Even the U.S. military has primarily converted over to modern printers, and if anyone's ever worked with the military, they're a little slow to change.
Well, when you get a huge setup going, like the military, for example, it's probably very costly to just switch everything over to a new system. So, as everyone's aware, computers technology, everything in the computer technology field is constantly changing. So, if the military wants to keep up to date, they would be paying billions of dollars a year, probably, to do that. And if you think about it, some of these programs were written in Fortran or some of these older programming languages, and trying to find someone to convert them to something that can be used on a new system today takes some, that's the other problem. You then have to reinvent essentially your program to be able to fill out the same forms and print the same documents that you were needing it to print out, that it, an old system can still do. So that's man hours, and it's just a lot of money to convert some of that old stuff into the new stuff. And some of the drawbacks for this type of printer, the dot matrix printer, is the support. With the technology being so dated, finding quality products and support for these printers is going to be challenging. If you are one of the companies that are still using dot matrix printers, you probably already have set up a support system, whether it be you hired a contract group or something to help you. But other than that, you can't just ask your average Joe off the street to come in and try to help you. So you actually need someone that understands this technology. And then the cost, which the technology is dated and has gone around the bend and being cheap to being more expensive once again. Because as things are no longer in demand, the companies produce less, which means there's less available and suppliers don't want to carry them. So if they're going to carry them, there's a higher price to that. It's the whole supply and demand.
Now, there are other very rare types of printers out there. You can find some old plotters that actually have the colored pencils in them and actually draw out images and that sort of thing. Those are pretty few and far between, and if you need that sort of thing, it's a very specific type of application. You'll probably already be aware of what you need for that.
Well, plotters are typically used for blueprints or plans that people are using for whatever their needs are. So, if you're making blueprints, you probably already have access to this type of device at your firm or where you work.
So now that we've covered the types of printers, there are a couple other features that are pretty common anymore for different types of printers, and there are things you might want to take into consideration. One of the first things you're going to see a lot of printers have anymore is they've been combined with the scanners to become a printer, scanner, copier combination unit. Now, this is a nice thing to have, especially for like a home business where you'd like a copy machine but you don't want to buy a standalone large-scale copier. It's also useful for all sorts of home applications. Occasionally having to send in paperwork for forms and that sort of thing. But largely, whether or not you need that is going to be a feature of how you're going to use the printer and what kind of applications you're going to need it for.
And then some of them will even offer the ability to be a fax machine as well. And this typically requires you to have a phone line connected to it, unless you have a software program and you'd have some other, yeah. But if they typically have the fax ability, they'll have like their, like a number pad so you can type in the phone number that you're trying to fax to, and then it'll send out the fax, which, you know, basically that's like a copy or scanner where it'll scan in your document and then transmit across the phone line your fax, just like a normal fax machine. Another growing feature, and it's starting to become more and more common, is networkability. Basically, they are putting in network cards into the printer, so you no longer have to connect your printer to just your computer. Let's say you have a computer, let's talk about a small family that has, like, you know, husband, wife, and a child. Let's say they all three have a computer, but they only want to use one printer. With the network ability, you could set it up, and with the, it connects to a wireless router, and then you can have all the computers access the same printer and all print to that one printer. You would no longer would need a printer for each machine that you want to print from. This is also very useful for businesses that are going to have a larger setup and they want to have, well, if you think about it, let's say you have 100 workers that are all needing to print. You could probably, if they don't need to print at the same time, it's not a big issue, which most people don't need to print a whole lot while they're on a job. I know one of the cubicle farms I worked in, we had two printers for roughly 50 people to use, so, and they basically sat idle 75% of the time. So, you know, just to give you an idea. And you can get into all kinds of features, from having a stapler built in to having a collator on them to having a top feed system where you just stack all the papers that you want to scan and print. Well, scan in and then, like, copy out. You can just stick them in the top and it'll scan and copy them. There's things to, yeah, you name a feature, they, if you've seen a feature for something a copy machine might have had, they've now started integrating all that stuff into the printers. And actually, the printers and copiers have sort of merged into one massive device for something. So, and fax machines and basically anything that had to deal with printing paper, it's kind of come into one device. So, but as you add more and more features to your printer, scanner, fax machine, copier, whatever you want to call it nowadays, it's going to cost you more money.
So, you know, just as with just about everything else we've mentioned in our podcasts, just keep in mind what you're actually going to be using it for and how much you want to spend on it, and be careful not to buy bells and whistles that you don't actually need.
And a tip from something I've seen happen at the university I once worked at, just because you have, let's say you bought a laser printer, don't assume the product, the paper that you're using works with the printer that you have. I know most paper will work with most printers, no problems, but let's say you want to do a overhead, one of those clear plastic overhead sheets you want to print on. It has, if you're going to have a laser printer, it needs to be able to take the heat of the fuser, or it will melt to the fuser and you've just ruined that printer. So, and same if you're going to do an overhead sheet for a ink printer, you need to be able to have one that has a coating on it to soak up, to be able to absorb the ink to keep that image. Because if it's one that's designed for a laser printer, You'll pull out a sheet and you'll be able to take a rag probably and just wipe it clean.
You know, that story about the overhead sounds really familiar.
Yeah, one of my students' workers that used to work for me had that happen.
And what kind of a boneheaded person would try that in a school printer?
And the worst thing was, the student did that after the student worker told him not to. I am correct. You did tell him not to do something, you know, not to put his own stuff in, and then he did it anyway.
Yeah, he was told by both of us who were working at the time. In fact, the other guy actually went in there and showed him how to print the right way to the actual transparency printer and set it up for him, and he still went back and did it the wrong way and cost himself, I don't know how many hundreds of dollars in fuser repairs.
I think they charged him the price of a brand new fuser, which is $500.
Very nice. Poor guy. I'm just real broken up about that.
He could have saved himself some money if he just didn't do it. Anyway. Well, I think we did the summary. You did that.
Yeah, that's pretty much our show for the day. For the week. For the whatever.
Well, we probably should also talk... We're going to end up just switching this up a little bit. We're going to do it every other week instead of every week. Main reason being is we're both busy people. Unfortunately, we want to still provide you quality information to listen to. So rather than diminish our quality and what you guys can get, we're just going to change it so that way we'll be producing a show every 2 weeks. And you can, if we ever have, you know, things change, we can get more time, we can put more episodes up. We might put an extra episode up, like, once a week or something. But right now, the plan is to go every other week just to kind of give ourselves a little more time to research some stuff and be in our own life without doing the podcast 24/7. And next week, we plan on talking about memristors. I know we mentioned it in the memory podcast, I believe. If you want to... We didn't go into a whole lot of detail because at that time, there was only basically a HP announcement going, hey, we're getting these on the road, and we're getting closer, and that was about it. Now, as of the 2nd of September, they have released more information on the general concept on how they're working, and they've given us a lot more information to go with and how close they are to getting them on the road and into products. So we'll hopefully be able to give you quality information on memristors. It might be a little detailed. Okay, it'd probably be very detailed. And if you don't want to hear how voltage flows and with the memristor, it may not be an episode for you. You can contact us by sending us an email at question@computersbyteback.com, and that's BYTE for byte. We also have a webpage, which is www.computersbyteback.com.
We also have a Facebook page.
I will normally put up some updates onto the Facebook page, so that way you can kind of keep in touch or with what's going on. Feel free to contact us. We value your input and feedback. I know there's been some that have already sent us some feedback, and we appreciate that, and we would like to hear more from you. And this is Grebog.
This is Malcor.
Thank you for listening.